Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, February 16th, day before the 17th, Saturday night, once it's new moon. Well, we've got three good hot guests coming up, actually four coming up today. Of course, we're going to do the recorded show, but we got Majid Ali coming up. He's a certified nutritionist who specializes in Chinese acupuncture and all kinds of. He's an herb guy, and he's working on Codex. He's my kind of guy. His clients include Brad Pitt and Jennifer Lopez and other celebrities. Got Dr. Stuart Garber coming up, the godfather of homeopathic medicine. And he's pretty amazing. And then, of course, their websites are up there on the BBS radio. And finally, another guy. Who walks it like he talks it, Matthew Ferry, the new money magnetism guru who educates Fortune 500 CEOs on how to be human and achieve wealth through self-asserted surface service to the community. He puts his money where his mouth is. He personally hired Jefferson Starship to be a headliner at this concert for peace in the city of Orange in 2003. And, of course, we got David Tickle finally coming on. He's just finished up some great recordings, and he's a film producer and a record producer of the biggest names in Hollywood and anywhere else in the world. So we're going to now continue on with where we left off last week, and hope you enjoy the show. There's a lot of good stuff here coming up. So away we go again.
And of course, the first proven electronic cure for cancer was brought about by Gianni Dotto, a University of Milan graduate in the 1950s. This device was called the Dotto ring, operating on the same thermomagnetic effect that the Earth's magnetic aura is created by. And if you get into the thing called the Seebach effect, where you use two dissimilar metals, one of copper and one of nickel, put an DC current through it, you create a magnetic field with no polarity. And of course, the human aura is a magnetic field with no polarity. Most magnetic fields have a plus and a minus, and when you alternate them, you have current. So there's a difference between the Earth's magnetic field and a normal one. Dotto's work was paralleled, by the way, by Professor Gerald L. Willis and Dr. Robert E. Zipp, Ph.D., both professors at the University of Dayton in Ohio. Of course, we all know that for years, Orthodox medicine has approached disorderly conditions strictly on a metabolical level, using herbs, liniments, tonics, drugs, fine extracts of alkalines and acids from herbs, and a whole field of inorganic creations such as aspirin, Tylenol, and bufferins to alter the biochemical systems within our body. Some of the methods discovered and used were highly effective. Others were pure and simple scams to feed the almighty pocketbook. All in all, today is, you know, everybody is confused because technology on a biochemical level became infused totally with greed and ignorance. This is what we always have to work through. Then if you all remember back in the 70s, suddenly the new age appeared and everyone had a solution. Greed changed its guise, I think, and slowly slipped into a holistic health movement as it began its worldwide crusade. Vitamin companies, if you remember, appeared right and left on all sides. Each one had the miracle ingredient, DMSO, and procaine extracts and products such as Gerovital, human placentia shots were proclaimed, you know, by the greedy as a solution for the needy. To further confuse the intellect, which was now seeking hard to reverse the aging process, great seers of greed began to bring on miracle cures from the east to the west and take discoveries of the west to the east. Remember when all the gurus and everybody was coming? And this, of course, was the religious crusades in the medieval times begin to appear. This now was as it was before, except greed was educated and ignorance was not. And great religious movements sprung at a close parallel to the already corrupted holistic health movement. In the name of spirit, ignorant men, women, and children now in an almost fever sought out the Reverend Moons and the Jim Joneses for the answer to eternal peace and salvation. On a quieter note, the calmer distressed citizens put even greater emphasis on the more traditional religions. Because their beliefs had stood the test of time over a few centuries, they argued they must be on the right path towards eternal peace. Everyone still had a personal savior, still supposedly yet to come to put the final seal of approval on everything. Well, here we are in the 90s, and guess what? Things haven't changed that much. Children are dying more painful deaths at earlier ages. Leukemia, for example, in children is on the increase, where I mentioned why, because of too much copper being in the system, and when adults take copper and put it in their system, they screw up their red and white blood cell counts. Their children have a tendency to be born with leukemia. Check with the City of Hope over in Doherty, California. The medical profession is introducing, of course, stronger drugs to calm us quicker because our freakouts are more intense and on a more regular basis. The religious movements are condemning everyone and everything that defies their dictates. The family unit, which is the most powerful unit of energy in the whole universe, is dividing itself like nuclear fission, an atomic reaction. And those not caught in the middle are either on strike or protesting. Occasionally, a ray of light does appear in the darkness, only to illuminate the way for a terrorist threat. Now, what you might say is, what do I say is the answer? Well, I'll give you a few clues about some of the philosophies that you might look into that might help. First of all, realize that energy seeks its own balance. You attract into you what you express. That's why I emphasize and emphasize so much about the human aura and the conditioning of your environment where you sleep and eat. Realize that your body is an expression of your thoughts. And a lot of times in relationships, people don't want to face the problems, but what you don't like in others that you love is oftentimes your most predominant trait. So it's very important, I think, to recognize faults in others as maybe a foundation for some faults in ourselves, and then from that point on, pursue to get rid of these faults. And another thing our society does is judging everyone. You shouldn't judge anyone unless you walk a mile in their moccasins, as the Indian says. Another one of my favorites is condemnation without experimentation is the height of ignorance. Don't destroy people's thoughts or ideas until they've actually been proven out a little bit. And then when Christ had a good one, he said that, "May he that is without sin cast the first stone." And of course, you attract to yourself what you express, which balances right in there from energy seeking its own balance. And with time, I always said, time is a lady, treat it with respect. And patience is a virtue, not a gift. A lot of people don't realize that you got to work for it. It just doesn't come. And of course, the hard one is to love your neighbor like you do yourself. These are some of the basic things that are necessary in our personality systems that need revision oftentimes. Before we go on into the higher solutions. Now with the extraterrestrials that are here, they're teaching us a lot, and I think you have to kind of work through those basic things to get in touch with yourself before you really pursue the higher realms that we're all going to go to. And on top of all the negative things that are going on, there are a lot of positive things, and it's really important to start focusing more on the positive things, but at the same time when you're making this focus, be sure that you realize what the negative energies are all about, and that they're very much there, and you have to guard yourself against them. And this is why it's so important that you keep yourself in a low-key, balanced, think things out, and really get into this science thing that we're talking about. I think it'll help, but I don't really suggest anything for any solution at this point in time. Everybody has to sort of find their own way. And so far, I hope in all these tapes that we've been able to show you some of the things that Scott Wolf has said, some of the things that I'm saying right now, and will say in the future of this series, in my lectures and seminars, I hope that some of this will come together. And it'll work for you. And realize there are a lot of things out there that don't work. And we're trying to show you, why our things work, you might say, and others don't. But there are a lot of things that do work out there, too. But that's why I'm going so in great depth with the scientific principles, not only just the science part, but the philosophical part and the psychological part, because I think it all has to marry together, and it all has to correlate and work together. Pages out of it, because I think it's appropriate at this point in time before we get too heavy into spiritual and meditation and the music, we can start synthesizing a few more things here, because it's very important to really understand some of the old Eastern philosophies as well as the Western ones, because the Eastern people, a lot of their philosophies, sciences came from the Brahmins in India and Tibet, and the Brahmins, of course, were taught by the Rishis. The Rishis were the group of the Pleiades in the album Fellowship of Sound, the music album. There's a poem in there called Heritage on the Second Side. It's a story of the Rishis and the Pleiades and the music. Now let us begin, I'm reading now from the book. Let us now begin studying energies as they are in the universe, as they are in you. they work together in us. All master souls are tested by other master souls when they are in the mental plane. Medium, if you are realized, but only become real when demonstrable on the physical plane of everyday life. And these truths must be understood by others, as many gather a truth brought on by a master, a new level of consciousness said to be brought on. If you remember early on the caveman example that we're talking about, bringing up the levels. In 1861, when Babaji gave Kriya Yoga to Lahiri Lahasya to demonstrate these different results of Kriya Yoga, of course Lahiri Lahasya transformed this over to Sri Yakeshwar. Sri Yakeshwar was a teacher of Magaiba named Paramahansa Yogananda. Paramahansa Yogananda, of course, brought the Kriya Yoga to me and started the SRF Society. This Kriya Yoga technique has changed the lives of many, many different peoples. In 1953, at Forest Lawn, where he had 800 people in his audience, Paramahansa Yogananda, which means golden swan. And in front of these 800 people, he had people like Lieutenant Governor Goodwin Knight, and he had Binay R. Sen, who was the ambassador to India at the time, to America. And he left his body. He gave a speech, a farewell speech, and left his body. And his body stayed warm and didn't decay for over 30 days. His body temperature remained normal. And then he was put in a particular area in the mortuary, and he's still there today. And this, of course, demonstrated that a person has control over destiny. And this, what he was demonstrating was a thing called conscious exit of the body. And it was an amazing thing. And, of course, it left an inspiration in the lives of millions and millions of Americans that have studied the techniques of the SRF. In order to teach life principles from an unbroken lineage of masters, of which Christ and his disciples are part of, there existed way before Christ's time esoteric schools of thought. Most true esoteric schools test their initiates as a stress test. Thereby the initiate can show others he has conquered the greatest lie in the universe, which of course is death. The American Indians did this with their finest braves. When they went to the top of a sacred mountain, got within a semicircle of rocks and allowed the rattlesnake to strike them again and again. I'm sure a lot of you saw the Billy Chack movie. The amount of chiari released from one bite would destroy the form of the average person in about an hour by paralyzing the central nervous system, thus driving the consciousness out of their form into what is called the afterlife. Once the central nervous system is paralyzed, circulation stops and oxygen cannot circulate to carry the grounding energies that are vital for the conscious mind and material body to manifest in balance with the material world. So you lose form, and uneducated beings in the material world view this as death. But a free soul knows that the consciousness of the deceased has moved into a higher plane. Most Indian braves, however, survived the ordeal as they had wise teachers. A teacher's wisdom may be gazed upon by the progress and achievement of the students. In the Egyptian mystery schools, the same task was administered in the bottom of the Great Pyramid in a place called Chamber of the Ordeal. The initiate entered the pyramid from an underground passageway located between it and the Sphinx. Before the initiate could be admitted into the upper section of the pyramid, he was given a poisonous extract from a mushroom and spent 7 days and nights with the ordeal of the soul in the lower astral planes. These bands of energy in physical existence under the earth's surface, where consciousness itself manifests. These are the bands that are in that. These bands are in this particular chamber. And we'll get more into the chambers of the pyramid later on. Modern theology is very much aware of the space and terms such spaces as hell, Hades, purgatory, home of the unrested soul. These names have been coined to express a lower feeling brought on by the misuse of the life force. When the initiate had conquered the passions of life, by realizing the penalties involved and realizing further that God is all-forgiving, he began to rise into the pyramid itself, into the queen's chamber. Here he experienced his second birth or realized life in greater abundance. The time spent in this part of the pyramid was only 3 days, and when he moved upward into the king's chamber, and then he moved upward into the king's chamber. Before entering the sarcophagus in the king's chamber, he went through the outer room called the Room of Triple Veils, where he learned the lessons of Maya, the false deceptor of illusion, which traps us by our five senses until our sixth sense opens and frees us. Before the initiate can realize his quest for freedom, resurrection into spirit, he has to crawl on his hands and knees through a small passageway that leads into the king's chamber. Here he learns that you must humble yourself before you become exalted, and one who exalts himself first shall be humbled. Upon reaching the king's chamber, he spent 9 days in the pyramid, 7 days below underground, 2 in the pyramid itself, and the 3rd day he reaches the king's chamber and understands what Christ meant when he said, in 3 days I shall build again this temple. Now you got to realize that, I'm quoting here, now I'm going to stop reading for a second here, but you got to realize that in the pyramid, the reason the initiate had this experience is because the pyramid shape itself is a representation of one of the 7 levels of consciousness, depending on where you are located geographically within the pyramid structure. The total time the initiate spent was 10 days. The first 7 days signified God building creation and man attempting to destroy it through ignorance, and the last 3 days signified rebuilding of the temple, mind, body, and spirit, so that he shall dwell in the Lord forever. And I'm not trying to get religious here or anything reading out of this book. This is a spiritual input, and it has no connotation about a person's particular belief system. What we're doing is just quoting the facts of how things happened at a particular time and space and what this really meant. Now, it's interesting to note that he spent in this 10-day ritual, the initiate spent 7 days underground and three days above it up in the pyramid itself. 10 days. Christ himself was the last of the great initiates to be initiated in the Great Pyramid. The teacher or master of ceremonies or keeper of the pyramid was called the Hierophant, and it was he that handed down to the master of Jesus the title of the Christ. This great Hierophant was called in the Bible the Ancient of the Days. The pyramid in those days was part of the magic city of Heliopolis, which was the last mystery school Christ attended before taking up when he was 29 years old. Strangely enough, just as this was Christ's last school, so it was that he was the last initiate to take initiation in the pyramid. When Jesus left for Israel, the pyramid was sealed off and the passageway blocked, its passageways blocked, and the entrance hidden away. The theologist of that time called it the Bible sealed in stone to be opened again only by divine appointment. Today, 2,000 years later, we are beginning to realize the Christ principle within our own nature and take initiation in a chamber inside a pyramid, but face the ordeal in life itself by taking responsibility for our actions and forgive possible actions of others, which is, by the way, sometimes quite hard, especially those who are ignorant, by showing them a better way. Thus begins the birth of Christ within the hearts of all of us. A few years ago, when I was active in my studies with the Tibetans, they asked me to go through the sacred ritual in the deserts, as had the American Indians a century before me. The poison they selected was strychnine, and I agreed with a little apprehension to do this on the upper Mojave Desert in a very sacred place. It took me a year and 7 days of preparation for the experience. I was ready for the ordeal, which lasted 3 days. During the time, I had to use every bit of knowledge and wisdom I had accumulated to survive and return, because I took all those poison in my system. Sometimes I ran, sometimes I prayed, sometimes I did intensive yoga and breathing exercises. My entire life ran before me. Past lives ran, and future experiences here and other worlds of consciousness became apparent. Late in the 2nd day, I knew I was winning the battle for the return to civilization in my present form, and I began to experience a tremendous high, and also began to realize this entire life existence is all energy moving from one place to another, and God gave us total freedom to move this energy any way we desire. When I returned from the desert, I knew I had conquered fear and was and will eternally be thankful to all my beautiful teachers for those divine moments of truth. To show my gratitude, I vowed to serve God by educating others not so fortunate as to have had a direct experience like I did. And then, of course, when you move through this book, I will present these different energies as I do, as I experience them in the metaphors for connecting them to the modern school of thought that worked for me. And, of course, everybody out there listening to this tape may see things differently, and that's what I would encourage. Because beauty gains its essence in individual experience, and reality becomes more real when we share our different viewpoints. Now I'm going to skip over a little bit further here because I encourage you to read the book. I'm just getting laying down some more foundations here so that when we get further into it, we can understand it a little bit more. And when you read the book, I want to quote now from the book. The names God and Logos are used in this book, and we're going to mention Logos a lot when we get into the planes of consciousness, throwing that in there. Anyhow, they're using this book to connote a divine being, omnipresent as the universal energizing power, indwelling life, directing intelligence within all substance, all things, all beings, separate from none. This being is manifest through our solar system as divine law, power, wisdom, love, truth, beauty, justice, and order. And when you get down into justice and order, we start getting into the sciences, terrestrial and extraterrestrial. They all come together at one point. The solar logos is regarded as both immanent within and transcendent beyond his system, of which he is the threefold creator, sustainer, regenerator of all worlds, and spiritual parent of all beings. And this is where we get into understanding that we are all cells in the greater being. Whether as a principle or a being, God has been conceived in many aspects as playing many roles. Ancient Egyptian, Hellenic, Hebrew, Hindu, and Christian cosmologies represent him as bringing his worlds into existence by means of the creative power of sound. And when we get into sound a little later on, and timbre, start remembering some of these things that I wrote in The Death of Ignorance back in 1979, because we're very much into sound now as part of the use of laser light to create this consciousness. When God spake in six creative epics or days, each followed by a period of quiescence or night in all worlds, all kingdoms of nature and all kingdoms and all beings came into existence. As a result of this outpouring of creative energy as sound, forms appeared expressive of the divine creative intent, embodiments of divine life, and vehicles for divine intelligence. Thus God may be conceived as a celestial composer, divine musician, perpetually composing and performing his creative symphony with its central theme and myriad variations. This concept of creation by the voice, Logos doctrine, important is a study in the subject of God, is developed later in later chapters of the book, and a little bit more so in the tape also, but more so in the book. You're going to need the book later on if you want to go into this part of what we're teaching. God has also been poetically and mystically described as a divine dancer. Nature, with all its varied rhythmic motions, including the cyclic swing of planets around the sun, terrestrial changes, the flow of river, waterfall, and stream, the ceaseless movement of the ocean waves, the swaying of the trees and flowers, the ever-changing forms of fire and flame, when I studied that with the Tibetans, that was amazing. The emotions of electrons around their nuclei is conceived, notably in Hinduism, as part of the great dance of the supreme by which all things are created and sustained. A man's idea of God is the image of blinding light that he sees reflected in the concave mirror of his own soul, and yet is not reflection. His glory is there, but it is the light of his own spirit that man sees, and it is all that he can bear to look upon. The clearer the mirror, the brighter will be the divine image. But the external world cannot be witnessed in the same moment. In the ecstatic yogis, in the illuminated seer, the spirit will shine like the noonday sun, and in the debased victim of earthly attraction, the radiance has disappeared, for the mirror is obscured with stains of matter. From these there emerges the inevitability that the idea of divine purpose, a great plan. The plan is assumed throughout this book to be evolution, but not a form alone. The word evolution is herein used to contain a process which is dual in operation, spiritual as well as material, and directed rather than purely natural or blind. There is a freedom, and this is what a lot of people have trouble understanding, is this freedom between what is ordained and what is preordained in their lives and what control they have.
This seminar series is continued on the other side.
Sorry for the glitches we're getting there, but it's good information. I had this tape edited to make it better. It was actually originally recorded on I don't know if it was a D8 DAT deck or what we did it on, but we had to have it upgraded. So when I upgraded it, whoever did that for me got some glitches in it, but the information. It's just a little irritating, but the information is good. It's all 100% rolling on, you know. So anyway, we're going to continue on the other side. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Come on, let's go. It's taking its time. Here we go. Love that Laguna surf.
This process is understood to consist of continuous development of form, accompanied by a complementary and parallel unfolding of consciousness within the form. Although man cannot completely know the evolutionary plan from his superiors, sages and spiritual teachers throughout the ages, he learns that what the motive is to awaken and bring fulfillment, that which is latent, seed-like, and germinal. Divine will, divine wisdom, divine intellect, and divine beauty are all latent in the seeds. Macrocosmic and microcosmic. The apparent purpose for which the universe came into existence is to change the potentialities into actively manifested powers. Our Earth, for example, for each of the kingdoms of nature, there is a standard or ideal which is dual, which as is an evolutionary process. The ideal for consciousness in the mineral kingdom is a physical awareness, and for form, hardness, and beauty. In plant consciousness, the ideal is sensitivity, capacity to feel, and for the plant form, beauty. For animal consciousness, it is self-consciousness of feeling and thought, and for animal form, it is beauty. For man, the evolutionary goal is the complete unfoldment and expression of his inherent divine powers, will to omnipotence, wisdom to omnipresence, and intellect to omniscience. In the perfect man or adept, these powers are expressed in a fully conscious unity, and therefore in perfect cooperation with the Creator and all of the fulfillment of His plan. And so what I'm saying here is basically that we should all go to the adept stage, the master stage now. And this is what is necessary to fulfill this mass self-mastery is a temple or a body that can realize the full awakening potential of our inherent spirits that we all possess. No one has a greater spirit than anybody else. Some are just more developed and more conscious in the physical life than others. And this is one of the things where the extraterrestrial sciences really helps us out, because it allows our body the freedom and flexibility to pursue its normal path into this higher consciousness. But unfortunately, as we've said a million times already in this whole scenario, the environment is so badly polluted that it really harms this divine plan that's preordained for all of us. If we consider the Logos as a musician and the continuous process of creation as a performance of a great sympathy, remember music is considered a universal language, then this great work he conceived and developed in the earlier creative days and perchance perfected it in the silence and darkness of the intermediate creative nights. When once there will be light, he speaks by the power of his word and brings all things into being. The first expression of motif of the new universe is heard and responded to by virgin matter, and the planes of nature which inhabitants gradually appear. Into these the Logos forms pours forth perpetually his life that they may live, this being his continuous sacrifice, his everlasting obligation. It's the essence of the spirit of this great universe and galaxies, that their aura fields keeps our physical bodies and spiritual body is alive. And when we get into the ET meditation science part of it, you'll get in touch with the actual different divisions or categories of this power itself. But right now we're just showing you the overview. The Logos or verbum is in reality no word or voice of any being. It is pure will, expressive of the presumed purpose of intent of the Divine Father Mother in bringing forth the universe. It is the irresistible, all-pervasive inherent impulse to self-expression, expands the name of Brahma from the Sanskrit word brief to expand and grow, and fullness which reigns at the heart of all nature and all creation from the highest to the lowest. It is the will to fullness which sounds forth at that cosmic moment when the divine ideation is first emanated the will light from the absolute. And we're going to find that out in our meditation in a little bit. And then coming down now from the beginning, throughout the cosmic days and years to follow, the will light calls into existence suns, planets, and beings in obedience to law. Level after level, plane after plane of increasing density come into existence and gradually embody and show forth the will light. Monads flash forth their rays. Beings are emanated and inhabit the planes. Deeper and deeper penetrations. The cosmic will thought word awakening the sleeping substance, forcing its atoms to answer, obey, embody, and echo, or resound the cosmic word. The light shines forth from the center to illuminate the darkness and render invisible the hereto invisible robes in which the All Mother is wrapped. A little bit further, the universal word, when uttered, becomes manifest as myriads of chords, such as coherent, self-existent sound with its force and light manifestations. And then we talked about how light and sound all works together and how it works in a basic frequency in the body. Everybody has a central frequency, which is determined by the length of the DNA, which is 39.9 inches or 39.5 inches. And the individual parts of the body takes individual notes of the sound and manifests this power into the oneness and the beingness that we all are. Each chord appears as relatively changeless abstract form, archetype or divine idea in the higher worlds of the planets. These archetypes, in their turn, sound their word, relaying into the lower worlds of primal word force. Magnetic fields are set up therein, matter is drawn into them, and with the aid of the gods, is molded into evolving forms. These forms, vivified by divine life, become the abode of intelligences, which is the monads, at the mineral, plant, animal, human, and superhuman phases of development. And the extraterrestrials, by the way, are very much into nature. The Pleiadians, for example, look at horticulture as a way of life, a closeness to God. And even though they have this tremendous long lifespan, they have done amazing things with horticulture and raising the plants. In all their spare time, they all have gardens that they work with. And even their spaceships, sometimes they have hulls that are growing like huge mushroom-type shaped plants, which they inject with a resin just before they pick them, and which gives them a hardening, which they can use as a spaceship or hull. I remember when Leo Fender at Fender Music Instruments over in Fullerton, California, one time used to inject trees with a certain dye and let the trees grow with this particular stain. And later on, he would harvest the trees, and through the rings of the trees would be these different colors and these different dyes, and they would cut them out and make veneers, and the most beautiful veneers they put on guitars. They call them the Wildwood series. Pleiadians do similar things in nature, where they can color woods before they're ever harvested, and they can cause things to grow into shapes which can be usable as a shape. And then they bring the density of this natural growing organism from a soft plant solid to hardness as many times as steel by injecting certain kinds of resonances at the right moment. As a result of the experience in these forms, intelligences assisted by God gradually unfold their innate facilities and power. Degree of development set both for them and for the forms has been attained. The gods are thus conceived both as builders of form and assistants in the evolution of consciousness. Now, I'm going to go into, I'll just read this last little bit here. When this standard has been reached by all beings and in obedience of the law of cycles, the time limit of objective manifestation has been obtained. The whole solar system is withdrawn in a subjective state. It is in this condition it remains until, under the same cyclic law, it reappears in the process of development, or ascent is continued from the point reached at close of the preceding objective manifestation. Occult philosophy sees this process as continuing indefinitely, there being no limit to the evolutionary possibilities. This orderly progression has no conceivable beginning and no imaginable end. And what we're saying here is that the universe is not solid, and creation is not in a linear time frame as it appears to be. What is happening with the universe and the galaxy, it's solid and it's there 1 minute and it disappears into nothing in the next. And then a second later, it's solid again, and the second after that, there's nothing there. There's a day and night period existing even as you hear this tape in the entire existence, the universe, yourself, and everything else around. And when you start to realize this, you begin to get free of the illusion because you can start to tune into these moments of non-manifestation, which gives you a power. How do you think that these yogis, for example, become invisible or Christ was able to demonstrate walking through a wall, things like that. This is possible by realizing you can work through this. But to the ego or the imagination that is not aware, creation is rising and falling, or you could say in other terms, breathing. If you're not breathing technique is happening, you're not aware of there are freedoms, there are emotions that can be moving, you could move into. Even some very powerful magicians and illusion artists get in touch with this energy field, which is a day and a night, happening millions of times per second, and it's the vibratory rate that we talk about. The vibratory rate, the heart has a vibratory rate, everything in the universe has a vibratory rate, gravity. And when you start to realize what the vibratory rate is, you can operate outside of vibratory principles and become free of it. From the solar gods, it passes through their lesser brethren, rank upon rank, until it reaches the physical worlds. There, with the assistance of nature spirits, it throws matter into shapes conceived by the creative mind. Now, we're talking about creative energies when I say it. Capacity of sound to produce forms may perhaps find support from sonorous figures which can be formed by the vibrations of a substance emitting a musical tone. Geometrical figures are, for example, formed by a sand on a plate of glass or metal when the bow of violin is drawn along the edge. Ernest Florence Frederick Chalmby, 1756-1827, a German physicist, produced geometrical acoustical figures which were formed by the nodal lines in a vibrating plate made visible by sprinkling sand on it, where it settles on the lines of least resistance. Jules A. Legistigeau, a French scientist, 1882-1880, produced figures by curves due to the combination of two simple harmonic motions. And I have pictures of these in the book, by the way. They are commonly exhibited by successive reflections of a beam of light from the prongs of two tuning forks, or by the mechanical tracing of the resultant motion of two pendulums, as in a harmonograph, or by means of Wheatstone rods. Legistigeau's are also produced figures by a horizontal and vertical tuning fork vibrating simultaneously. These figures differ when the forks are either in unison or at varying differences between a phase or if a capacity of physical sound to produce forms may also be attributed to sonorous creative energy or word force emitted as superphysical, then the Logos Doctrine finds some scientific support. So what we're saying is, why does this, when you take a piece of glass, like a big, large piece of glass, like say a 1 foot by 1 foot mirror, which you can buy at any standard brands or any store, put sand on it and vibrate it, pour a bunch of sand on it and vibrate it with a violin bow on the side, and have the glass, of course, standing up on the end of a wooden piece of wood, don't just have the glass laying flat on the table if you want to try it for yourself. Stand it up on about a 1-inch diameter piece of wood so that the wood is glued onto the tabletop, fastened to it with a vise, and then glued in a 1-inch area at the bottom of a 12-inch piece of glass. And then pour the sand on it and vibrate it with a violin blow, and you'll see these different geometric shapes form. And of course, when you get into the Fibonacci series, which is the order of the pyramid, which I'll talk about in a minute, some of the other things that happen, you'll begin to see that this vibrating energy starts to form and make definition, which then you can see, if you look around these, you'll see these same forms and definitions in a snail shell and different other kinds of places. You begin to see that there is a tremendous natural order to all things, which I think is very important to understand. And the extraterrestrials, in their teachings on their own planets, even, remember, like the Pleiadians go to school for almost 120 of our years. They teach about how this particular energy field around different objects works, and they get in touch with it.
And so by the time they're, you know, equivalent to our teens, which means they'd be about, you know, 115, 20 years old, they'd have the same development we'd have as a teenager. In other words, you know, in retrospect, the Pleiadians have begun to get an understanding of nature itself. And man lost, of course, his touch and his ability to deal with nature a long time ago when he fell from the grace of God. Now, when you get down into the pyramid itself, a few things begin to happen when you start dealing, because the pyramid is a collector of all these different forces that we're talking about. When you're talking about the pyramid, because when we're talking about these different forces originating from these different planes of existence, we look at the pyramid as the final shape that the energy assumes before it grabs onto other atoms to form molecules to form cells. Point of view, you could define pyramid energy as a progressive energy transfer through geometric focusing and dynamic electrical amplification over a measured plane of coordinates. And this, defined in the simple lay terms, means that the pyramid shape is one of the four building blocks of man and universe, as we've previously said. Now, inherent in the angles of the pyramid, if you were to look at the look at the top of the pyramid and look right. So you're looking directly over the pyramid. You start looking down, you end up with what's called the Fibonacci series and the way that the progressive numerology or of the angles is defined. This is the Fibonacci series is a number system used in botany to determine the basic plant leaf distribution in trees and other plants. The name, the Fibonacci series, was named after its discoverer. The series is unique in the fact that its value is written as PHI can be determined as phi equals 1/2 of the square root of 5 over 2. And what this basically means is that if you were to look at a series of numbers, the Fibonacci series of numbers is determined by the following. Each succeeding number is determined by the sum of the two preceding numbers, beginning with the lowest whole number. Thus, for example, 1 and plus 2 added together would be 3. 3 plus 5 would be 8. 8 plus 5 would be 13. 8 plus 13 would be 21. 21 plus 13 would be 34, and so on. And all these succeeding terms then would define, for example, if we had any leafy plant, the distribution of kernels on a pine cone, the distribution of buds on a pineapple, we find there are two things occurring. The leaves, kernels, and buds all rotate around a central axis in the clockwise and counterclockwise direction, and the number of leaves in one direction is always different from the distribution in the other direction. The difference is always according to the Fibonacci number system. For example, if one pine cone there were 21 kernels in the clockwise direction and 34 in the counterclockwise direction. And in the sunflower we looked at, there were 21 kernels in the clockwise direction and 55 in the counter direction. Ratios also are also incorporated as phi in the dimensions of all living things. Even in the, and if you look at Leonardo da Vinci's work, which I point out in Death of Ignorance on page 113, you'll see the divine section of man being broken down. The human spine also can be developed into these periods of energy, starting with the base of the spine and working up. And then you could, the mathematics of the number of vertebrae going up the spine correspond with the number of spokes in a chakra. And the chakra, remember, goes in opposite directions, starts to form the same series. The Great Pyramid is the only structure known that incorporates the ratio of phi, P-H-I, phi, sometimes pronounced, into one building. This makes it all the more unique, as the ratio of phi are not supposed to have been known when the pyramid is supposed to have been constructed. Phi is a magical, mystical, unending number, 1.618033989. This number so fascinated the artists during the Renaissance that they spent most of their time exploring its endless possibilities and utilizing its ratios in their paintings and sculptings. Modern architects use it in building design, and it has been found to be a very pleasing ratio. So this gives you an idea about pi. Now also, besides PHI, the measurement of the circumference of a circle can also be found in the pyramid. And this is something I should bring up too, because people often kind of bring two things together. We bring about talk about pi. Don't get pi mixed up with phi, PHI versus radius, 3.1415126. If you have a 6-foot base pyramid, the apex will be 2/3 the base length above the surface of the ground plane of the pyramid. And then that means like a 10-foot pyramid. People say, well, that means 10 feet tall and put over a king-size bed, it won't fit. No, a 10-foot pyramid is about 7 feet tall. Multiply this height by 2 and divide the answer into the entire base circumference. In other words, the height is multiplied, how high this pyramid is, by 2, divided the answer into the entire base circumference, you will reach the mathematical unit called pi. This is used to compute the diameter of a circle. The number is always 3.1415926 and can never be rounded out. This means a true circle cannot exist in one plane of energy or consciousness. So what happens is, if you start looking at, you know, the fact that the pyramid mathematically in its forms a circle, but the circle, when you look at the pyramid as its mass forming a circle, you realize the circle doesn't come to an end, then you got to realize that we're forming a spiral. And so then you begin to see the force of around the pyramid is being defined by pi, but it's forming a spiral. It's larger at the bottom, smaller at the top. It shows you that it's vibrating. So that's telling you it's vibrating. And when you look at the PHI series, which says this is so many rows of on the pine cone, this row will have, you know, 35, and the next one will have 54 kernels. It's mathematically progressive. You begin to see the pyramid is a vibrating form that's mathematically progressive. And it becomes fascinating by putting the mathematics together. And then you hook it into the fact that the pyramid is the shape of the carbon atom and the iron atom in the body. You begin to see that these are performing these kinds of functions in the human form itself, and the whole piece, all the pieces of the puzzle start to fall together.
And now, at this time, we shall take a pause from the pragmatic progression that thus far we have embarked upon. Most audio tape series inform the listener purely from a three-dimensional reality. Some of the better ones enhance their information through subliminals. This tape series so far has maintained a three-dimensional alignment with its sound effects and background music. The purpose of this is to make a non-stressful connection into the chakrams of the listener. Now, however, it is time to begin opening the chakrams to the energies of the fourth dimension. It is, as you remember, the beginning of the promise from an extraterrestrial, a gift to the human race. And in this next phase, I'm going to reintroduce Scott Wolf to talk to you a little bit more about the spiritual side and about a few other points as well.
This is Scott Wolf. Welcome to the next section of this tape series. On this section, I'm going to describe to you the ancient science of neural life illumination and its relation to the UFO extraterrestrial phenomena. This science has been taught directly to me through oral sound vibration from the ancient masters of the Sanskrit Vedas, the oldest body of knowledge of the Earth planet. The Vedas were originally not written down until approximately 10,000 years ago in the Devanagari, or Sanskrit language as it's known. Devanagari means the language of the gods, and originally the knowledge was passed in a strict disciplic succession from guru to disciple telepathically. Now, in the modern UFO phenomena, we find this happening quite frequently, where people report a telepathic communication. And indeed, some of the reports that we hear about extraterrestrials captured by the government and things of these sorts talk about extraterrestrials communicating telepathically by putting people in a trance and then speaking through them. This was particularly the case with Lieutenant Colonel Robert Friend, who was head of the Project Blue Book, the government's secret project, when he was visited by the Krill Alamard Afa. He described in a tape that in 1952, a woman from Maine had come in and said she had received telepathic communication with aliens. Of course, at that time, Project Blue Book was checking out any potential serious UFO phenomena. At that time, they met with the woman in an abandoned warehouse just near the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. The woman went into a trance and started revealing high technological information that she couldn't have possibly known. Later, the extraterrestrials told her they would be willing to transmit the information through one of the lieutenant colonels who was present. One of the colonels volunteered and was immediately gone into a trance by the power of the extraterrestrials, and with their Adam's apple moving up and down rapidly, began to describe high technological information. Later, they asked if they could see a UFO as proof of these beings who were claiming to be from Uranus on an intergalactic mission. The group moved to the window and saw a UFO hovering right outside this building, like I mentioned, which was a abandoned warehouse between the Capitol building of Washington, D.C., and this area. The area had been blanked out on the radar, and there was no signal that they could receive because they had checked right on the spot there. Going back to the office, they discovered